Epimenides, excerpt from the Lives in the Loeb Library edition of Greek texts translated by Robert Drew Hicks. Epimenides, according to Theopompus and many other writers, was the son of Phaestius. Some, however, make him the son of Dosiadus, others of Agasarchus. He was a native of Knossos in Crete. Though from wearing his hair long, he did not look like a Cretan. One day, he was sent into the country by his father to look for a stray sheep. And at noon, he turned aside out of the way and went to sleep in a cave, where he slept for 57 years. After this, he got up and went in search of the sheep, thinking he had been asleep only a short time. And when he could not find it, he came to the farm and found everything changed and another owner in possession. Then he went back to the town in utter perplexity, and there, on entering his own house, he fell into people who wanted to know who he was. At length he found his younger brother, now an old man, and learnt the truth from him. So he became famous throughout Greece, and was believed to be a special favorite of heaven. He is stated to have been the first who purified houses and fields, and the first who founded temples. Some are found to maintain that he did not go to sleep, but withdrew himself for a while, engaged in gathering simples.
I listen to the wind of my soul. Where I'll end up, well, I think only God really knows. I've sat upon the setting sun, but never, 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 never. I never wanted water once. No, never, never, never.
Epimenides, Yellowstone, 1806. Naturally, because he had belonged to the Junto, he was inducted into the American Philosophical Society. Though the title of the association seems exalted, it remained nothing more than the original gathering of men who exchanged books and ideas, some of which were pornographic, where they discussed vigorously while drinking heartily. Much of what was discussed devolved to gratuitous conversation of private commerce and intimate matters, meaning that, of course, philosophy, as it was so called, should always purposefully advance amusement, enterprise, and profundity in equal due. He was a short, muscular, handsome young man, athletic as a racehorse, strong-limbed, and strong-lunged. A marginally successful, marginally wealthy, marginally educated young man, he did not himself own any books that he might contribute to the group's library, but he read everything that others placed in the library. He spoke very little in the group, preferring to listen patiently for the conversation to be exhausted. Then, when he did speak, Franklin admired his succinct summation and his murderous sarcasm. When he disappeared, he was so very sorely missed by Franklin and the society that the society languished in mourning for him, it seemed, and so declined by a long neglect. It did not meet from 1746 until 1767, when it was at last reconstituted without him, because several members could no longer remember why they had not been meeting. He disappeared altogether for 57 years. When he was rediscovered in the streets of Philadelphia, Franklin was by then deceased. But he himself had remained miraculously the young man that he had been when he had disappeared. It was as if 57 years had elapsed without his aging an hour or a day. Some acquaintance, and a late member of the society, enabled him to begin anew his life, introducing him to Thomas Jefferson while he was campaigning in Philadelphia. Jefferson, who was yet a suckling infant in the year that he had disappeared, found him admirable, did not believe the stories concerning him, and immediately invited him to join the Corps of Discovery, which, should he be elected president, he must its ambition fructify. "The object of your mission," the president would write to the captain of the Corps of Discovery, "is to explore for the purpose of commerce." The Corps of Discovery departed Pittsburgh by keelboat in a modest assembly of not more than 11 men on August 31, 1803, at 1 hour before noon. The captain wrote his first journal entry upon departure, that while 7 were soldiers like he, there were 3 or so others whom he must take on trial. He was one of those taken on trial. Editorial note. The text shifts between third-person account and first-person account. The first-person account is that of Epimenides. I do not know why it happened. I do not know why I was born. People ask me what I remember. Morpheus is a goddess, not a god, the sylph of my soul. Coy, and in her sylvan hideaways, by her charm and indirection, by her seduction and whispered dissembling, she will tell me what she means by what I cannot comprehend. Thus I remember everything, and I remember nothing. I was not dead, but I was not alive. Some ways I was awake. In a manner of speaking, I was not absent, though was not present. It seemed no surprise to me what I saw when I came out, as though by whispering she told me, or sometimes I think I remember that she led me by spectral witness to see what transpired. There were more people, more bustle in the streets and commerce and things no one cared for before. More urgency in impatient intercourse I heard, or perhaps it just seemed impatient after so much sleep. Populations changed, larger, more varied, more opinions more readily expressed. Everyone believes they are entitled to one. Unfamiliar speech. I doubt that they understand what they say to one another. Fashions sillier than before. That is all true. More argument, more drink. I was sorry Mr. Franklin was gone. What I do remember about that time, I cannot say with certainty that it happened, but it taught me to wonder about all that I see. Some things unbelievable actually happen. Some things believed do not exist. On the other hand, it is clear, it is plain to see, if fish will swim in air, you ought to know what's dead and gone, what's right and wrong. If I learned anything from sleep, it is actuality. The Corps of Discovery encountered Indians on the Kansas prairie, tribes which formerly had dwelled in the Ohio River Valley but had migrated to escape the settlements of whites. They had taken up, however, the rifle and horse of the white man. And these were now indispensable to them, and therefore they required his trade. The captain recruited a guide from among them, who was herself a captive abducted from a nation of Indians inhabiting the far north of the Missouri River, toward whom they would be traveling. They had found the keelboat unnavigable in the shallow and wasting shores of this river, often choked by sandbar and dead trees, especially as it shrank from annual drought, though still wide in the autumn of the year. Following the advice of French fur trappers, they obtained several pirogues. At this time, too, was the first encounter with buffalo, which was, as it were, the cattle of these Indians, who ate them, made clothing of them, made their huts of them, and who worshipped them as wise and sacred to life. The buffalo abounded in such herds that at this time of the year were so large and continuous that they grazed everywhere. The earth was darkly marbled with their moving millions upon the shoulders of the hills, filling the hollows with multitudes, moving and grazing, and wading the wending streams between the hills, and drinking at quiet ponds. They were as many as the grasses were lush, and as the clouds in luxurious flow, they peaceably roamed, only occasionally thundering when a congealed mass of them would rear and run. They are intended for the infinite grasses as the infinite grasses are intended for them. He hunted them as easily as shooting pigeon, but he found that he could drop them only with a heavy gun, and at first he would lose the wounded bison to the crowd of them and would only find it some days later where the herd had parted about it and left it dead to decompose. The birds of prey upon it, showing him the way to find it by their circling flight and cries. Contracted then to hunt and feed the corps, I was permitted leave of soldierly strictures put upon the others. One who drank whiskey without consent was put out to make his way home alone, which punishment is severe and cruel in this desolate land for a man young and ignorant as he, though granted that he drank more than he should and was useless to travel. He shall die of starvation unless he eats grass. A corporal fallen asleep at his post one night was whipped on his bare back 100 lashes of the mule popper, and his flesh was so rent and bloody I thought the Indians might think it cruel, since they, at least, would kill a man they tortured. But such they call their discipline, and so afraid our captain is of what is unknown and lies in the dark outside the environs of our campfire. I myself am usually out there, and I prefer it. If the buffalo do not need that campfire, why should I? Alone, and I prefer it. And as we are climbing now upriver, I can feel the distant mountain air breathing on me, though I can't see them yet. I think the skin of the sky has gotten so thin, the stars alone are bright enough for me to see all I need to see at night. He traveled round them in an orbit, hunting for them, returning with meat, sojourning and partaking company and whiskey, and then detaching to hunt again. He knew where they were by the smell and the noise that they made, and he saw that the animals skirted them just the same. Occasionally he surprised an Indian who was also watching them. Once, when he rejoined them, they had gotten out of the pirogues after having to tow them for many miles against a troublesome river where sandbars afflicted passage, and had set up a camp to take an extended rest. Game, the graceful antelope of these parts, was plentiful there, though difficult to kill because they were so swift and anticipated him with such ease. He missed most of his shots. They found nearby some domes of rock rising barefaced, like thrusts of the earth's skeletal frame, shoved out of the body of the prairie like giant broken bone. The Indian had burial grounds nearby, where they saw birds gathering, cleaning corpses. They climbed one high dome to view the prairie, being the first prominence by which to gain a lofted view, and saw the awful vast stretch of wind-washed grassland, the sparkling thread of water coursing west through it, lined with flickering cottonwood. It was early September, and the mornings were sometimes chilly, and they knew they must make more headway on the river to find a wintering place, hopefully in the foothills closer to the river's end, where they might see the mountains that imprisoned this prairie and barred their way to the sea. As they descended from this dome to return to camp, on the gradual descent of the hill they found a field nearly 4 acres, covered with mounds and small holes, the residence of a little animal called by the French petit chien, which sits erect beside the mouths of them, and make a whistling noise at the intruders, and approached will dive into them for refuge. To bring them out, and because their time was for the moment carefree, they set up a tandem to exchange buckets from the river and poured into one of the holes as much as 5 or more barrels of water without ever filling it. Finally, digging in, they dislodged and caught the little owner, and digging down another of the holes for 6 feet, they found on running a pole into it they had not yet dug halfway to the bottom. But they discovered 2 frogs in the hole, and near them a black rattlesnake, which had swallowed a petit chien. The petit chien caught by the men was kept by the captain on a tether and carried in a leather satchel. Thus transported and well fed even when food was meager, the creature survived the entire journey, 4,000 miles over unknown mountains and to the distant sea and back again, until it was delivered to be a pet to the president himself, and for a time scampered on the carpets of the White House to the surprise of official callers. They also saw fast lizards and grass snakes that live habitually in the holes with these animals, eating insects they do not, even while the larger rattlesnake haunt their abodes to eat them, or more especially their plentiful plump litter. The petit chien are justly named, resembling a small dog in some particulars, but they have also greater points of similarity to a squirrel. The head is like the squirrel, except large, and that the ear is shorter than the ones found in Pennsylvania, and its tail is short and tufted like that of a gopher. Its toenails are long, its fur is fine. The sounds they make in their village of mounds and holes as the sun sets are like the cheery gabble of gossiping women at a county fair. He slept among them while they camped nearby, and they accepted him, became curious about him, and permitted him to sit near without trying to run away. I don't think I will want to live among men again. Not white men. Not Indians. They have their qualities for good or bad. They each have the aspect of God in their eye, but they are more generally perverse and petty. I find the natural world more simply understandable. I guess in my long absence I acquired a taste for silence. Such talk as I hear in their company, such exchange of personal gripes or appetites, I find useless, or worse than useless. The woods makes no such noises, and the animals do not complain. In October, as they began to see foothills rise in distances from the river, though still no mountain, the man Newman was confined, that is, hobbled and ostracized and went unfed, for mutinous expression. He might have preferred the fate of the whipped corporal. They found a gorge in the river there, where there was an outcrop of stones resembling a human person and resembling a dog. All turned to stone gradually, starting at their feet. As if for reason related to this sighting, the captain gave the hunter his dog to take with him on his hunts. Partly it was a matter of the dog's pleasure. Partly it was a matter that the captain began to suspect that the hunter would likely desert them on some adverse occasion. But having the dog, his personal dog, with him, the hunter might be deterred, or the dog might help them to track him down in his desertion. What a comfort the dog is, the better nature of man for all of her fawning. Because she is surely true. She's not duplicitous, even if self-serving as all us mortals be. Her affection and regard is genuine and express, and besides, she keeps me warm. I suppose I keep her warm, too. Near the river one afternoon, they observed a group of Indians who were friendly and who had come to pick a great quantity of fine grapes, so many in one place that it seemed they had been planted for their delight. Lingering there with them and enjoying the feast they had, the captain and his men took some pity on the prisoner Newman and decided to terminate his punishment with a round of 75 lashes. This punishment of Newman was witnessed by the Indians that they had befriended, and it very much alarmed the Indian chief. He was agitated at the sight of it, and it had to be explained what had been the cause of the punishment and the necessity of it, of which he agreed when he had heard. But he said he would himself have put him to death rather than punish a man so, because his nation never whipped even their children. After the lashing, Newman was disbanded from the party. As good as a sentence of death this late in the season. He was seen to follow them for several weeks rather than attempt to return alone to civilization. After some time, he was not seen again. At the fork of rivers, they found more and more encampments in this part of prairie where the peoples had come for wintering. They were the Mandan Nation. In one of the encampments at the end of October, they found Frenchmen among them, fur trappers who had come by canoe and who had come to the territory when it was yet New France and had not heard of its purchase by the president. One of these spoke English, but as it happened, our hunter spoke French, which he had been taught by Franklin. Between these two, because several of the French could also speak with the Mandan language, there was a lively engagement and exchange among them all for many days. They learned much from one another. The captain learned, for example, that the canoe was the advisable transport in the river as one traveled north, not leastwise because it could be portage around falls and rapids that would stop it. They collected thus in the fork of rivers for an autumnal bacchanal that may model the times of the rendezvous, which shall occur when Bridger and other mountain men replaced the French in scavenging the territory, or, rather, supplemented them, for many of these old trappers would still be there. They made a great feast. They drank much whiskey. They traded goods and gotten gains and tall tales. The fiddler played his jigs, the white men danced, the Indians laughed. The Mandan were in constant admiration and amazement of the captain's Negro manservant, who found their curiosity and insistence upon removal of his clothing to be annoying. They were delighted by the appearance of his body and wanted to touch it, but he found this unseemly, for he was a house slave and not used to the indignities and abuse which his brethren might abide. Still, he tolerated it as his master's pleasure. They found the Mandan maids were affectionate by nature, caressing the men much and unashamed. And at length the captain relented to his men's complaints for carnal pleasures, and it seemed no offense was taken by intimacy, even sometimes publicly displayed. The Mandan warriors were, by contrast, stoic, stony, where the maids were childish and playful. Often the warrior had one or two little fingers cut off, and on inquiring the cause was told it was customary for this nation to show bravery by some testimony of pain, and that it was not uncommon for them to take off the small fingers of the hand at the second joints, and sometimes more. It was becoming very cold in the mornings. Some men with the rheumatism in the neck, some with the same in the legs, it was well to establish a fort. But it should be some distance from these heathens, thought the captain. But not so far as to dissuade commerce or pleasure. Shortly before they departed, the prairie was set on fire by accident or whim by a young man of the Mandan. The fire went with such velocity that it burnt to death a man and a woman who could not get to any place of safety, another man, woman, and child much burnt, and several narrowly escaped the flame. The cause of the hunter and his dog being saved, as the grassland seethed with flames, was an enormous green buffalo skin throw over themselves. The fire did not burn under the skin and left that patch of grass, the hunter and the dog thereunder, all intact, while all around above it was smoldering char. The fire passed through the camp at 8 o'clock in the evening like a stampede, but went with such great rapidity that it left no more damage than soot and singe. Nothing valuable caught fire. In late November, they moved into huts within the fort that they had erected. A front wall of tall pine, upright and peaked as spears, and braced by earthwork. This place, which they called Fort Mandan, is situated in a low point of ground on the north side of the Missouri, covered with tall and heavy cottonwood. The backside consists of two rows of huts, an angle where they join each other. Each row contained four rooms, 14 feet square, 7 feet high at the front, with plank ceiling. The roof slanting so as to make a storage or a sleeping loft above each room, where the high point at the back of each room is 18 feet from the floor. Chimneys are simply holes above the fire pits at the rear of each hut, and the men and the other creatures that were kept there generally warm within these rooms, though now the temperatures were sub-zero. Nonetheless, there began to be frequent incidents of frostbite, and several received the pain of amputated toes before the winter shall pass away. Awakened by the sergeant of the guard to make me join him to see a marvelous light in the northern sky, some 20 degrees above horizon, aurorally spread, but rising to the acme sharply. Flaring peaks of reds and blues, blending bars of color that wavered like curtains, disappearing and renewing as fluttering embers do, darting upwards or dancing sideways resolving to another hue, or melting altogether into the empty sky. My dog beside me also entranced, and the sergeant wanted me to explain or name the thing we witnessed, but I had neither name nor explanation for it, and could only suggest what a superstition might blame. The guard was undecided whether this was good or bad for an omen to us. I took the sight to be natural, but know not whereof it came, and that again bespoke the simple necessity to take whatever is as fact, to take it as both common and strange, and to accept what we really know is very little of what may actually be. The shapes of lights, continuously changed in their intensity and shimmering color, modulated liquidly across the skyline and did not fade. We stood beside one another and stared for as long as we could tolerate the cold. Neither spoke about it to the others the next day, and if others saw it, they never did say. The Corps of Discovery wintered for 5 months. The fiddler played long lamentations at night, and the men talked of home. Even after the weather was not inclement, the rumor of the river was adverse. Travel may be unnecessarily imperiled, and so they abided and put themselves to the task of building canoes, as the Mandan taught them to do, and to making leather clothing, which they found more serviceable than the broadcloth that they wore, and making moccasins of parfleche, or cured buffalo hide, just as they were taught by the French and Indian alike, to fabricate for good use.